Hello and welcome to another episode of Honor Radio. I'm your host, Mark Soto, and it is an honor to have our special guest with us here today. He's inspirational, motivational, spiritual coach. He is it all in one, and I want to introduce to you Mr. Kurt Hines. Kurt,
it's a blessing to be here.
God bless you, buddy.
I appreciate it.
I mean, I just want to jump right into it. I want the podcast fans and arena to hear more about your story. And let's just, I know they know about you already. What are you up
all,
to?
All three of them. Some grandmother and some someone else.
What are you up to now? What are you up to lately? Tell us about your website. Tell us about your school. Let's jump right into it.
Well, as far as what I'm up to now, it's business as usual. The change is I've listened more to my wife and my oldest daughter. I have four children. A few months ago, my oldest daughter, who's in the behind-the-scenes things as far as analytics with social media and just the business end of it. Mm-hmm. She said, "Dad, I want to create a website for you." And I was like, "I'm not techie at all." I'm like, "Great, why?" You know. So she and my wife really have been putting things together, and it's been humbling because, long story short, they created a CoachKurtHines.com. I think it is. To be honest, that's what I think it is on website. And they reached out to former players, coaches, and some other people for testimonials, and that's been the favorite part for me so far, just selfishly and humble, you know, it's very humbling to hear a little bit of some of the lives you've changed. Mm-hmm. But I've coached high school football now, going on my 22nd season, 21st season, I should know that. I teach elementary school. I have four children and two grandsons. So I'm blessed. Life is good.
So you're in New Hampshire, right?
Yep.
And tell us how you arrived to Coronado Island. Tell us how that happens.
Well, I'm going to go very back to my first year of coaching because the gentleman who gave me my first job coaching, Mike Bellevue, came by here yesterday with his son, which is cool. His son moved out to La Jolla, so he came by, and it was great to just connect with him and, you know, catch up a little bit. But I was an assistant coach in New Hampshire for the first 10, 12 years of my coaching career. Mm-hmm. Then became a head coach at Bedford, New Hampshire. It was a brand new high school. Mm. And we took our licks. You know, that I was mentioning earlier that we set records my first year as head coach by getting our teeth kicked in more than anyone else. Like, we got beat up bad, real bad. And ended up building, not me, but we, a powerhouse. Mm. We were truly one of the best programs in New Hampshire. Thought I was going to retire there. And then our oldest daughter of four children who had come out to school here got married. And she called one night and said, "I'm pregnant." And my heart leapt. You mentioned spiritual, you know, my family means everything to me.
Sure.
So I was like, "Oh God, thank you. I'm going to be a grandfather," you know? And then not too long afterwards, my heart sank. I was like, "Wait a minute. We're not staying here." You know, I didn't know where life was going to take us, but I knew we didn't want to be grandparents on the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. So we came out here, met my grandson. I have two now. And he was born, not premature, but some complications. You know, he's perfectly fine now. But so the first time I saw him was in Rady's Hospital, Children's Hospital. So the emotions were just at its peak. So we knew we were coming out here. Thought it would be a 1 to 3 year plan of, you know, networking and saving money. And I ended up applying for a job at Christian Elementary School in El Cajon. Flew out here, interviewed, got the job. And there was quite a journey through that process of, you know, just kind of faith. My wife didn't have a job yet. We hadn't sold our house yet. Mm. But all those things worked out. I was an assistant coach at Christian High School for 2 years. And they had and have an amazing program. Mm-hmm. Great young men.
They've actually been in the Honor Bowl.
Yes, yeah. And Brad Jeremiah, I don't think he was a quarterback. Talking about an amazing young man. Just unbelievable. Yeah. So I was blessed to coach some amazing young men there, but just felt the tug to be a head coach again. Mm-hmm. And applied here at Coronado in another school. The same day I heard back from both saying they want to interview. And things happened so quickly here at Coronado that I called the other school and said, "Thank you, but I'm going to withdraw my name." Took over 2 years ago, and we're on our third, getting ready for our third season here. So it's been a whirlwind of a time.
I got to tell you, buddy, I saw you down in the weight room, and you are a beast. I mean, my goodness. We're going to show some pictures of you, man. But I got to tell you, you were doing a great job. The kids were motivated. I could tell that you really pour your heart into your work.
Thank you. It means a lot. You know, for me, the weight room is 75% of coaching. What I mean by that is, really, I think 90% of coaching is relationships. 90 or 95% of it is, you know, everyone talks about the Jimmy's and Joe's and it sounds good versus the X's and O's.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to know what you're doing. You have to know the sport you coach, but it's about relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, for me and everything in life, it's about relationships.
So true.
And I love the off season almost as much as I love the season, because that's where you build the relationships. And I can have more time working side by side with a player. That's how I find out how they like to be pushed. And certain kids love you to be amped up and yell and scream, and certain kids are quieter. And when I spot them with a squat, for example, I'm just kind of almost whispering. The music's loud, so it's not really whispering, but no one else hears me. I'm just talking to them a little bit. But I love it. I love it.
You know, so let's talk a little bit about that. You know, every coach talks about wins, losses, that type of stuff. And then character is always brought into the mix. What's your take on that?
Yeah, as far as the wins and losses, it's unfortunately, my 21 years coaching, I've coached with a lot of good men that have lost their families because they've been too focused on chasing rings and not focusing on the first ring, the wedding ring, and the most important relationship. And I'm not putting myself on any pedestal. You know, we've won in my 21 years coaching as an assistant and as a head coach, conference championships, division championships, state championships. And I love that. Mm-hmm. But it's all for naught. If we really want to teach our young men, I think every coach says it's about helping them become better young men.
Mm-hmm.
If that's truly what we want to do, then they're not going to see us here 7 days a week. You know, I told my staff here, not my staff, our staff, that we're never going to meet on Sundays unless we're doing a cookout and it's with our families. Because for me, that is a family day. Mm. So as crazy as the season is, I want to make sure that my family knows that they're not taking a backseat during the season. Mm. And I've heard coaches almost brag about saying, hey, that, you know, that they know they're football widows during the season. Well, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it doesn't matter how many trophies you have. You know, there are a lot of trophies up there from well before I got here, so I can take no credit. But they're going to collect dust.
Yeah.
And if I truly want to empower young men and help change lives, I need to do it by leading by example. So I want to have them see me, whether it's on social media or better yet in person, interacting with my wife, interacting with my kids and my grandkids. So it's. I love the competitive nature of football. I love the violence of football, the chess match. I love the game planning.
Yeah.
But for me, it's about relationships. I and it's almost selfish in a way. I met with a young man and his parents earlier, and I started crying during part of the meeting. And I'm fine with that because it was just he's dealing with some personal things that I've also faced through with my family or gone through. Yeah. If I'm not empowering someone to be a better person, then what am I doing?
We were on the football field yesterday over at Cathedral.
And I haven't heard of that. Just kidding.
So we're on the football field, and one of the things that really blesses me as a coach, and I know Rick could talk about this too, is when the kids that have been through the program, the honorable program for years, they run up to you, and they recognize you, and they thank you. Thank you, coach, for what you do. Thank you for bringing this event back to our school year after year. It means a lot to us. We heard that from three or four athletes
That's
yesterday.
Awesome.
And I got to tell you, bud, it makes me just, I get goose pimply, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, these kids are getting it. And it really is about winning goes way beyond that scoreboard.
Amen.
It really does. And we're as coaches, you know, 99.8% of these people are never going to see a football field after high school.
Right.
So it's about, you know, teaching about how to be a father, how to be a better brother, how to be a better son, how to be a businessman, you know, and you talked about it perfectly in regards to relationships. We are in a relationship business when it comes to everything.
Yeah.
If you want to be successful, it's about relationships.
So, 3-5.
I love
get
it.
Up. 3-5.
Oh, we got a 3-5. Get some. Yeah. So, okay. You talk about on your website, some coaches coach for the income. Great coaches coach for the outcome.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit of that.
Well, let me start off by saying that I remember reading that somewhere, so I can't take credit for that.
I get it.
That's not mine.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. I taught elementary school for 25 years. I've coached high school football for 21, 22 years, long enough to forget the exact amount of years. Life was hard sometimes. You know, raising four young kids, I don't care if you're in California, New Hampshire, middle of the United States, you don't make a lot of money teaching and coaching unless you're in certain places in Texas, mm-hmm. I guess. So my wife and I, prayerfully, there were a lot of times I'm like, man, do I stay in teaching? Do I go make more money in sales or do? And there were a lot of offers from friends from church and other things saying, "Hey, come sell this with me or do this with me." For me, it was always my family first and foremost, because you can't beat the time with your family when you teach and coach, even though it's a huge commitment. But it is, most of my friends still to this day make a lot more money than I do. But most of them will say to me, Coach or Kurt, I wish I had your job. And I used to, years ago, Mark, I used to joke around with them saying, hey, I'll trade with you. I wouldn't trade with any of them. Because at the end of the day, it's about changing lives. You know, the two toughest things I've had to do as a football coach is play against my son twice. I was a head coach, and we lived in the neighboring town. So his junior and senior year, we played each other for homecoming. Yeah. Heartbreaking.
Wow.
Yeah, heartbreaking, but fun at the same time. And then I had to speak at a player's funeral. And it's beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time, but it's about making a difference. You know, at the end of our days, and we can, you know, it sounds preachy and stuff, but, you know, I've also heard one of my pastors had once said, you never see a U-Haul carrying a Hurst towing a U-Haul. I want to be able to, whether God has me here for one more year or 50 more years, to know, not just at the end of my life, I want to wake up every day and say, I'm going to make a difference again today. And coaching blesses you with that platform. You know, if you do it the right way, we have a captive audience. You know, I have a biased opinion. I know there are certain parents out there that say, hey, listen to their children. You have to play something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot easier sports to play than football. So I think the great majority of the young men and young women that we're blessed to coach choose to be here. So we have a captive audience of people that sometimes we're preaching the same thing mom and dad are preaching, but we're not mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So they're going to hear it from us. You know, the whole adage of it takes a village. We've been blessed with an amazing platform.
You and I have similarities.
Great looks.
Yeah, no, it's not looks. Well, maybe for you, not for me. Coach.
This is radio not being recorded. I can take both of us.
I know what it's like to coach with my kids, coach both of my boys, but also to eulogize a player. I had a Marine that played ball in the high school where I coached. And he was killed in action. And the parents, Patty, who's our part of our board of directors for the honor group, asked me to eulogize her son. And we became friendly. And I got to tell you, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do.
Yeah.
But what I fell back on is what I still fall back on today. And that was my faith.
Amen.
And that's my next question for you. You're pretty outward about your faith, and you wear it on your sleeve just like I do. Do you show your faith in the locker room before and after a game?
You know, I do, and it might cost me a job someday, and hopefully it doesn't. I asked when I got the job here if we could have, you know, team prayer and the administration, and I felt the answer would be no, but it's always no if you don't ask. Mm-hmm. They said, no, definitely not. I said, can we have a moment of silence? Mm-hmm. And they said, yes. So I explained to the players and the coaches that during that time, I'm going to pray, and no one can hear me. It's just inside personal. Mm-hmm. And I explained to them, you know, we have a young man well before I got here. There's a memorial at the end of our field by the scoreboard who lost his life playing the game. And I believe he was. There are two young men here that have lost their lives. But I explained to them, it's not a rah-rah moment. This is just, if nothing else, paying respect to the family who've lost, you know, a son. I've had several people over the years. I fought Twitter for the longest time. My wife was the one. It's a whole nother story that kind of drove me to it. But that have said to me, you know, hey, separate the two. You're a football coach. And I thought, you know what? I don't ever want to be preachy to someone, but it reminds me, once again, not my own, right, but of the saying, you know, always preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. And when necessary, use words. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I
love that, by the way.
I've always loved it. It's just that, once again, not my own.
Yeah.
But I think I was blessed to be on a different show a while ago, and someone referred to something I tweeted out, and the tweet was that we're all leaders. The question is, who are we leading and where are we leading them? I firmly believe that. You know, I asked my fourth graders, and we talk about the world and everything. I said, was Hitler a great leader? And my fourth graders go, no. And I go, yes. And they look at me like, what do you say, Mr. Hines? You know, you're just mind-blowing. I'm like, he was phenomenal. I said, he taught that there was a master race that was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and he was dark-haired, brown, you know, short, you know. I said, and they followed him. You know, so I truly believe that all the young men, all the young women we coach, they're all leaders. The question is, are they going to lead them after a big win or a big loss to that party to drink and smoke, or to go home or go watch a movie and hang out? Mm-hmm. Are we going to lead people to want to continue playing the sport and be better husbands and fathers and business owners and employees? Or are we going to lead them to turn to drugs because we abuse them and use them as pawns and not really treat them as people and, you know, the gifts that they are? So I think we have such a platform. And for me, my faith is everything. Now, I realize numbers-wise, I'm going to have a lot of young men I coach and coach with that have no faith or no need for it in their lives or what they feel. And I don't ever want to turn them away and get preachy to them, but I can be, in my opinion, be Christ-like and be that light to them without ever mentioning Christ, you know, in what we say.
I love that. I absolutely love that. You know, we last week we interviewed Coach Joe Kennedy. He's going to be on our podcast too. And I don't know if you know Joe Kennedy's story.
I don't.
He's a coach up in Bremerton that prayed after a game, and he ended up getting fired. And now his case is going all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
But when it comes to the Honor Bowl, one of the things that we do before our games that we've never been pushed back on, and I thank God for this, and that is the fact that we go into the locker rooms with a wounded guy, and this is a guy with no legs walking on prosthetics, a military commander, and a chaplain. And we tell the story of the Honor Bowl, and then we let the wounded guy lays it down about what it means to him about brotherhood and sacrifice, and tells them about what he went through when he went through injury. And then the military commander breaks it down into another oorah moment. And then the one thing we do is I ask them to all knee up. And it doesn't matter if they're public, it doesn't matter if they're private, but we knee up and that chaplain lays down a prayer.
I love it.
And it's been something that has been a very inspirational part of the Honor Bowl, and I've never had one coach question it, not one school administrator in there question it. It's because they see the power of that moment.
Yeah.
They see the power of it, my friend. And it's coaches like you that that are the inspirational motivators and the leaders that we need more of.
Well, I appreciate that. Not to get political at all, but I think it's ridiculous. You talk about the coach that lost his job and it's going to the Supreme Court. It blows my mind that there are so many parents and or administrators that will hear a coach berating a child, a young man, they're children, mm-hmm. young men, mm-hmm. berating them or swearing or that's part of the game. And no, it's not. It doesn't have to be. You know, we have a no swearing policy in our program. And not that I think if you swear that you're not intelligent. You know, I shouldn't admit this, but one of my children swears like a sailor, and she's not. But she's well educated. She's amazing. Well, I'm singling her out. She's an amazing mother. Love you, Hal. My point is, I've had a coach before say to me, well, you never coached in the inner city, which I haven't. And so that's where they come from. So in other words, that's what they're used to. Mm-hmm. And my response was, so if I have a young man that's used to being abused at home, that's what he's used to, so I can abuse him. No, it's just, I don't think I'm better than anyone else because I don't swear. There are a lot of people that swear a lot more than I do, and I try never to, but I slip sometimes. That are better people than I am. But what I want to teach our young men is that in the game of football, if we have what we see as a bad call and they let something fly and it costs us yards, it's the same thing when they leave our program and they have a job and their boss says, hey, you need to stay late tonight, but that wasn't in their plan, and they get mouthy with them, there's a good chance they might lose their job and then go home to their wife and say, hey, listen, we got to move. You know. So I want to make sure that what we're teaching our young men goes well beyond the football field.
You're doing it, Coach. You're doing it.
I appreciate that.
Parents versus coaches. In today's world, we hear and see a great deal of pressure from parents. Yeah. And I mean, we've heard of coaches being fired because of the pressure that they get and how that leans hard on coaches. What do you have to say about stuff like that?
You know, it's funny. I have to laugh a little bit because when I applied for my first head coaching job in New Hampshire, it was a very affluent community, much in some ways like Coronado. And the administration asked me, you know, how are you going to deal with parents that, you know, the helicopter parents? And we joked around after being there for a few years that they weren't helicopter parents. They were Blackhawk parents, just more expensive. You know, they could afford better helicopters. I had said to them that I felt at the time, I smile or laugh at myself because I still believe this today, mm-hmm. that if the young men know you love them as people, Once again, not as pawns to pad my resume so I can go on somewhere else that I see bigger and better. That 95, 99% of them are going to tell their parents, hey, listen, I got this. You know, yes, I've had parents that complain to me about playing time. Yes, I've had parents that complain to me about this reason, this or that. But, you know, 99% of the time, they support what we're doing because they know that we truly love their children. They know that we truly have their best interests at heart. I also think, you know, we are guilty of saying, oh, this generation. And that frustrates me because we're raising this generation, mm-hmm. you know? And once again, the platform we have is to teach, you know, the young men we coach about how being a young man or what it looks like and model that. So I don't look at it as coaches and parents. I really don't. I mean, yes, that's a huge factor of the game. But if we're doing our job, in my opinion, the great majority of them will thank us for it. Now, that's in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. I had parents before that we could have won a game by 35 points, but their son was the quarterback and we only ran the ball, you know, and still won by 35 points and I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm doing. You're always going to have that. You're always going to have the parents that question what you're doing. But as far as, you know, the grand scheme of things, I think parents truly, when all said and done, understand what we're trying to accomplish.
Do you have any type of pre-meeting with them before the beginning of the year and say, hey, you know, this is what we're going to be doing, and if there's an issue, how do they come to you? And you lay that all out, right?
We do, and the great majority of parents follow through. I always ask parents, I always tell them, never come to me about playing time, never email me about playing time. And I tell them protocol, have the young man go to their position coach first. And if the position coach brushes them off, then that's an issue with me. Mm-hmm. If they don't understand the answer or don't like the answer, then that young man should come to me. And if after going to the position coach and now me as the head coach, they still don't like or get it, then I said after those two things have happened, face-to-face conversations, then I'd love to sit down with the player and his parents and that position coach. And that almost never happens because usually by the time they've gone to at least the second step in coming to me, mm-hmm. they've understood that, no, coach doesn't dislike you, and this is why you're not starting, or this is what the reason may be. Mm. I've also talked before on this as far as, you know, playing favorites. And I had a young man this year that came to me and said, oh, so-and-so's playing favorites. Mm. And I just listened to him, and he was done. He was, like, looking for an answer. And I was like, we all have favorites. And he's like, you don't. I was like, I do. And I explained to him that our favorites are the ones that show up, that work hard, mm. that are academically eligible, that are respectful. And it was kind of like, you know, just so, yeah,
that'll be a good video for you.
Right. We do have those preseason meetings.
Yeah.
It's needed.
So, I want to jump right into how I got to know you. And, I know we touched a little bit about this at the beginning of our talk, but, you have become a powerful force and voice when it comes to social media. Your videos, your talks on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram has become, you know, a great, great motivational tool to people across the nation and coaches across the nation. How did that start? What got you going and starting to do that?
Yeah, I'm just really good at what I do and smart. I'm just kidding. Not at all. It's once again, behind every successful man.
Let's give him a 3-5.
There's that saying. There you go. Behind every successful man, there's a strong wife and a surprise mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. So back in New Hampshire, I paint murals in addition to teaching. I have an artistic side. So when Twitter came around, I had no interest. I'm like, I'm not into the whole tweeting your words, whatever. And my wife kept on kind of pushing me towards it. And what would happen is she would go to every game. She's my best friend, and I am blessed beyond measure with her. When we had away games, she would leave after the game, win or lose, and drive home. Inevitably, by the time we left the locker room and got the bus and got to our school, and I would be calling her saying, hey, who won this game? Who won that game? Trying to find out the standings and what, you know, who our opponents played and who they won. So she was like, get on Twitter. And I'd done a radio show in New Hampshire, and I still hadn't listened to her. I'm a slow learner. And they said, coach, what's your handle? I'm like, I don't have a Twitter. Like, you need to get on it. So I ended up getting on Twitter. And right the day before we moved across country, drive across country, I remember sitting on the phone just kind of scrolling through. And I had, I don't know why this number stuck out, but I had 1,888 followers. And I remember thinking to myself, Mark, I was like, why do that many people care what I say, you know? And I hadn't started doing videos yet. And then for some reason, I started doing a video. And for me, really, I joke about it, but there's no secret to it and there's no formula to it. It's, I think God honestly has given this platform, say, hey, you can reach more people. So there's no science to that. But when I talk about the relationships, I don't see a ton of people put videos out there. And my videos aren't anything special. It's a little selfie holding it here usually. But I think that there's a connection. If someone can listen to someone, and I've been very humbled by that because I don't, and I'm not trying to sound humble or diminish myself. I love what I do and I know my strengths. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of thousands of coaches out there that know the game of football better than I do. There's no doubt about that. I know the game well, but I know there are coaches out there that know more than I do. I know there are coaches out there that have the same passion for empowering others and using this platform to do great things. I've just been putting out there in video and people, I think it resonates with people. Mm-hmm. And then driving cross country. And as we've been out here for 4 years now, mm-hmm. it's been, the followings continue to grow, mm-hmm. It's humbling. It's opened a lot of doors for speaking engagements. It's opened a lot of doors when people come to vacation in California. I'll get a lot of different messages, private messages saying, "Hey, we're going to come meet you." And I'm like, "Oh, they're going to be very underwhelmed." not our young men or our program, but when they meet me, it's been a very humbling thing. And once again, as we talk about, we always tell our young men, you never know. We always say, we do, and I'm sure a lot of programs, everything you do is an evaluation. You know, I have a biased opinion, but if I have a three-sport athlete, football, baseball, basketball, whatever it is, I honestly feel that if they get in trouble in school around town, they usually say, "Hey, that football player." You know, whether it's justified or not, he could be a three-sport athlete. But I always tell them, you know, no matter where you are, everything you do is an evaluation. It's the same as coaches, you know. And our people are watching us, whether they because they love us and want to help us and watch us succeed, or we got the job and their buddy didn't, or they didn't, or whatever the reason is. People are always watching us, and we can hide from that and try to be fake. True colors will always show. But the platform we have, and we being coaches, players, all of us now, through social media, you can share a message, and it could be filled with hate and malice and all these horrible things, or love and trying to empower people. That message can go global now. And it's a very cool thing. It's scary in some ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's a powerful tool.
You know, there's a lot of athletes today that don't get recruited because of what they tweet.
Yeah.
It's because of their social media profile. So what do you have to say regarding that?
It's funny. I had shared something a while ago with a friend of mine. You're absolutely right. You can lose jobs because of it. You scholarships, relationships, whatever it is. We always tell our players, once again, you know, if you wouldn't want your mother, your father, your pastor, your principal, your coach to see it, your future employer, you know, don't tweet it. I think it goes beyond just, hey, watching what you tweet or what you post or what you like or comment on. I've started to really look at the people I follow more so and think, hey, why am I following this person? If I can gain, and I don't mean for myself, selfish gains, but if I can gain something by following you because, hey, I hear more about the Honor Bowl, and that's an amazing thing to bless many people, then I should keep following you. But if I'm following someone because I think they're funny, but the content is
questionable,
all these different things, really, why am I following them?
Yeah.
So I think all of us need to not just watch what we put out there, but really, what are we letting into our subconscious mind? What are we letting into our conscious mind? You know, people talk about keeping your circle small, and I'm guilty. I know I've tweeted things about keeping your circle small. The more I look at myself, I love people. I love meeting a lot of people. So I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want a small circle. I want a big circle. But there are different levels to that circle. Mm-hmm. But we have to ask ourselves, who's in our circle and how are we adding to their lives and how are they adding to our lives?
Coach, we need more people like you. Coach, I want you to know that. And I got to tell you, I was nervous when I was coming here to meet you.
How's that?
I've followed you for so long on social media, and you inspire me every day.
That means a lot.
I read it, and I really, it's an inspiration. And I just want you to know that, Coach. You're touching a lot of people. You're speaking to a lot of hearts. You're blessing a lot of student athletes. And that's powerful, my friend. And you've got a gift. You got a gift. You got a ministry, and carry that on, bud. Keep it. Carry that on.
I appreciate that.
I want you to know that.
Thank you.
So with that, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Honor Radio. And Kurt, I wish you all the best.
You're awesome.
Thank you. God bless you, buddy. God bless you. This is Honor Radio out. We'll see you next week. God bless.
You're awesome. I appreciate that.